Iran's leader says the main target of U.S. wars in Iraq and Afghanistan was Iran, but Washington failed to achieve the objective because of the power of the Islamic Revolution. Yemen's Ansarullah movement and Saudi-backed forces exchanged more prisoners on the last day of a three-day swap of nearly 900 detainees. Rival factions in Sudan clashing for the second day. Civilian death toll has reached 56. I'm Behruz Najafi. Welcome. Islamic Revolution leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei says that Iran was the main target of the wars that the U.S. waged in Iraq and Afghanistan. The leader said in a meeting with senior commanders of the armed forces that Americans failed to get their final objective due to Iran's power. He added that armed forces should stop at no level of progress and they should instead push ahead ceaselessly as threats never go away completely. The leader added that the readiness of the armed forces deter him per se, but he warned that the U.S. and its allies will continue to trigger conflicts where their interests are served. Ayatollah Khamenei also talked about Palestinian operations against Israel. He said that Israeli crimes are now sparking protest rallies even in the U.S. and the U.K., and this is a defeat for the regime. Moving on, in Yemen, the Ansarullah movement and forces loyal to former fugitive President Abdrabbu Mansur Hadi have freed scores of detainees as part of a prisoner swap deal. Now, planes carrying prisoners took off at the same time from the capital Sana'a, that's controlled by Ansarullah, and the northern city of Marib, which is under the control of Saudi-backed Hadi loyalists. Nearly 90 prisoners were exchanged during the flights on Sunday, while three other flights are to complete the prisoner exchange later in the day. The swap is the last of a three-day exchange of nearly 900 detainees under a deal reached in Switzerland last month. Saudi Arabia launched an aggression against Yemen in 2015. Large numbers of Yemenis have been killed or wounded in the war.
As the Saudi war on Yemen enters its ninth year, authorities from both sides have begun releasing hundreds of prisoners captured during the deadly conflict. The forces in Aden, who were backed by Saudi Arabia during the war, agreed to release 250 Ansarullah fighters and send them back to Sana'a. In return, the Ansarullah movement said it released a total of more than 180 detainees, including Saudis and Sudanese soldiers. The prisoners also include forces loyal to former Saudi-backed Yemeni President Abdrabbu Mansur Hadi and send them back to Aden. Among them were high-profile figures, including brother of former President Nasser Mansur Hadi and former Yemeni Defense Minister Mahmoud Al-Sobeihi. The prisoners talked about their feelings as they were set to join their families.
It's the most beautiful day of our lives because we got out of captivity and we're now safely heading to our country and under the protection of the Red Cross.
I now feel proud and honored as I'm returning to the Yemeni land. I will kiss its soil because it's like my tender mother. Greeting to all the Yemeni people.
Those, along with other prisoners, made up of some 900 captives who are released under an agreement reached in Switzerland in March. The agreement was the largest prisoner swap since October 2020. The International Committee of the Red Cross, which managed and facilitated the prisoner swap, said with this act of goodwill, hundreds of families torn apart by conflict are being reunited. Our deep desire is that these releases provide momentum for a broader political solution. Some within the Yemeni government in Sana'a said they expected a flurry of prisoner exchanges during the coming months. They said other such agreements are likely to be struck after the holy month of Ramadan to release all prisoners that can make up around 15,000. The prisoner swap deals, including the one which took place during a three-day period as of Friday, and the possible upcoming agreements, are seen by many around the world as a confidence-building measure aimed at creating trust between the warring sides in Yemen and preparing the grounds for upcoming peace talks.
The agreement between Saudi authorities and Ansar officials comes as 8 years of Saudi imposed war in Yemen has literally brought no single achievement for Riyadh. Many around the world have raised hopes that the recent prisoner swap deal could open up horizons for millions across the impoverished Yemen, that the years-long devastating conflict would eventually come to an end.
The prisoner swap agreement between Riyadh and Ansar Allah movement in Yemen comes as the movement's chief negotiator, Muhammad Abdel Salam, has hailed the negotiations as serious and positive. Abdel Salam says more talks have been planned to discuss outstanding issues, which include a permanent truce, full reopening of the southern ports and Sana'a airport, payment of public sector wages, and the withdrawal of foreign forces from Yemen. Sources say Saudi Arabia is planning to announce the end of the devastating war on Yemen. After all, the kingdom was leading a coalition that has been attacking the impoverished nation since March 2015. To reinstate Hadi, Riyadh launched a brutal war in collaboration with a number of its allies and with arms and logistical support from the United States and several other Western countries. The objective was to crush the Ansar Allah movement, which has been ruling the country since Hadi fled to Saudi Arabia in 2015. To achieve its goals, Riyadh used the most sophisticated weapons it purchased from its Western allies against the Yemeni people. Not to mention that the Arab kingdom imposed an all-out blockade on the country to bring the impoverished nation to its knees. According to UN figures, hundreds of thousands of people have so far been killed and millions of others displaced. The war also destroyed Yemen's vital infrastructure, leaving millions of people across the country in desperate need of vital necessities. UN estimates show some 4.5 million people have been internally displaced and more than two-thirds of the population living below the poverty line. Now, with the recent prisoner swap deal, it seems that Saudi Arabia is seeking to pull out itself from a quagmire that has been very costly on all levels. The princesses in Riyadh seem to have come to the understanding that billions of Saudi petrol dollars have gone into waste and are seeking to make a U-turn in their political approach toward regional and international developments.
Clashes between the Sudanese army and a paramilitary force are going on for a second day. The violence has so far killed scores of military personnel and more than 50 civilians. Heavy fighting is underway in the capital Khartoum as well as other cities. Violence erupted Saturday after weeks of power struggle between the army chief and his deputy, who commands the Rapid Support Forces. The rival general seized power in a 2021 coup. The RSF says it seized a number of state buildings, a claim that the army rejects. The One World Food Program has temporarily stopped all operations in the country after three of its employees got killed. The African Union's Peace and Security Council has held an emergency session in which Egypt offered to mediate between the warring sides. Now, Israel is planning yet more settlements in the occupied Al-Quds and the West Bank. The settlements are considered to be illegal by the international community, but there has been little or no action to stop them. Now, earlier we took a closer look at Israel's expansionism and international passivity. Let's see what our guests had to say.
Starting off with a news review of this bulletin. Israel plans to implement some 10 major settlement projects in the occupied Al-Quds and the West Bank. The projects include the construction of hundreds of new settler units and the expansion of some of the already constructed settlements. As part of the plans, the regime also intends to build roads as well as a major tunnel under the Khalandia checkpoint north of Al-Quds to connect settlements in the occupied territories. Tel Aviv gave the go-ahead for the projects back in 2017. Experts see such projects as part of Israel's land grab policy. Mohaber Abu Sada is a professor of political science at Al-Azhar University who joins us from Gaza City. We have Saber Abu Maryam, Secretary General of the Palestine Foundation, who joins us, Foundation Pakistan, who joins us from Karachi. Kate, welcome to you both. Mukhabar Abbasada, let me start with you. Tell us about the fact that Israel, even though I guess these settlement projects were drawn up back in 2017, is planning to go ahead with it now. Do you think it's using the distraction method where you have the internal protests that are happening and now it wants to take advantage of that and foray into going ahead with these settlement projects?
Good evening. Well, the Israeli settlement enterprise hasn't just started now. The State of Israel was created very much on the so-called settlement enterprise, which started even before the Balfour Declaration of 1917. Israel very much has confiscated Palestinian land to build Israeli settlements in violation of international law in the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and in the past in the Gaza Strip. And that is a flagrant violation of international law and of the Fourth Geneva Convention, which very much prohibits Israel from constructing settlement. New settlements or settlement units in the occupied Palestinian territory. Let me refer here to the number of Israeli Jewish settlers who have been implanted in the West Bank and East Jerusalem over the past 55 years since the occupation of West Bank and East Jerusalem. Up till this moment, there are roughly 800,000 Israeli Jewish settlers in the city of East Jerusalem and also in the West Bank. More than 450,000 Israeli Jewish settlers have been implanted in East Jerusalem, which in a way Israel is trying to very much divide the West Bank between North West Bank and South West Bank. And the completion of the Israeli settlement projects in East Jerusalem will make the Palestinian cities as isolated islands as a result of the settlements as a result of bypass roads and also other Israeli projects which have very much fragmented Palestinian communities and Palestinian cities and villages. And the bottom line here is that even Israelis are saying that there is no Zionism without settlement. The whole project of the Zionist enterprise to establish a state in the Palestinian occupied territories was based on the so-called settlement enterprise, and Israel finds settlement as a way to continue its existence, to continue the support of the Israelis and also Jewish communities around the world for the State of Israel. And that's why what we have been witnessing lately, that Israel, in spite of international condemnation and international rejection of that, Israel has continued to build more settlement and more settlement units. And let me just put one last point here, that this new Israeli settlement projects in East Jerusalem and in the West Bank is a flagrant violation of the Aqaba and Sharm el-Sheikh understandings which were reached between the Palestinian Authority and Israel with the sponsorship of the U.S., Egypt, and Jordan just in February 26 and also in March of this year. So Israel behaving as a country above international law, doesn't commit to any understanding, doesn't respect any international law or any understandings with the Palestinians. And unfortunately, the international community has failed to stop this Israeli settlement enterprise in the occupied Palestinian territory.
Okay, well, Sabir Abu Mariam, you heard our guest there that the settlement project overall is an enterprise that is widespread. This particular announcement shows the depth of it. And, of course, throughout the years and decades, we've seen how settlement expansion has continued. And one of the questions I have for you is the fact that the so-called international community, which comprises of Israel's staunchest ally, the U.S., has not done anything to prevent this, is a sort of green light, isn't it, for Israel to continue, especially when you have a minister by the name of Itamar Ben-Gvir, who comes from settlements and is all pro-settlements when it comes to the construction of it.
Thank you very much for inviting me to this program. First of all, I would like to say that the establishment of Zionist illegitimate Israel is based on settlers. And United States, British Empire, and France, they have created the Zionist illegitimate state through the settlers' colonialism, because when we saw that the colonialism were expired and the colonialism was damaged in after World War II, they used the settler colonialism. And till now, we are facing these settlers in occupied Palestine. And this settler colonialism was definitely supported by British and U.S. We say that Israel is an illegitimate state of Zionists. All acts by Zionist regimes against Palestinians are considered illegal because it is an illegitimate state. No international laws, no international institution considered Israel illegitimacy. For the past 7 decades, we have seen the Zionist illegitimate state continuously occupying Palestinian lands through the settlements. In the current situation, on the one side, Israel is the worst condition and suffering from the disturbance from the internal side. On the other hand, these new announcements of the settlements are definitely showing that Israel is weaker than in the past history. The international community, as you asked about the role of international community, we strongly condemn the role of international community from the Pakistan, because the international community also did not play any positive in this matter.
Sabir Abu Maryam, Secretary General of the Palestine Foundation Pakistan there. Thank you. And Mukhabir Abu Sada, Professor of Political Science at Al-Azhar University. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for tuning in.
And friends, police have been caught on camera using disproportionate force against protesters in the northwestern city of Rennes. Footage from the incident shows riot police handcuffing a man and a woman while restraining them. According to eyewitnesses, the man was wrestled to the ground after trying to help the woman who was being dragged on the ground. And that took place during a demonstration where police fired tear gas to disperse the rioters. France has seen months of violent protests over the government's controversial plan to raise the retirement age to 64. President Emmanuel Macron signed the bill into law on Saturday, and that has angered unions, which have called for the demonstrations to go on. Well, that's all for this newscast from Tehran. Thank you for being with us.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. In the limelight.
According to World Trade Organization, global food prices are likely to soar higher in 2023. According to the organization, costs shot up by nearly 20% last year. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT reported food prices surged 18% globally last year, including a 21% rise in the cost of grain. The World Trade Organization, WTO, estimated in its global trade outlook published recently. According to the organization, fertilizer prices saw an even larger increase of 63% year-on-year. The WTO noted that, in theory, higher food costs should encourage more agricultural production, resulting in greater availability and lower prices for food in the future, but warned that move expensive fertilizers could lead to reduced crop yields and ultimately new price spikes. The organization also noted that food prices fluctuated strongly in 2022, first jumping 19% between January and May, following the start of Russia's special operation in Ukraine, and then dropping 15% between May and December. Overall, while global food supplies are less precarious than many had feared in connection with the Russia-Ukraine crisis, they remain a cause for concern, WTO warned. According to its calculations, the volume of world wheat trade, for instance, fell roughly 7.5% since 2021, which leaves little margin for error if a major producer suffers a crop failure or climate-related natural disaster. WTO Director General Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala recently called on developed economies to be vigilant to signs of the food crisis triggering hunger in poorer nations. She reiterated her earlier calls for lifting export restrictions on food and fertilizers, noting that as of April 2023, some 67 countries have such curbs. She also warned that global trade is likely to remain under pressure from external factors in 2023. According to her, these include the crisis in Ukraine and other geopolitical tensions, inflation, and the impact of tightening monetary policy. She concluded, this makes it even more important for governments to avoid trade fragmentation and refrain from introducing obstacles to trade. Investing in multilateral cooperation on trade would bolster economic growth and people's living standards over the long term. According to Reuters, shoppers around the world will have to pay even more for groceries this year than they did in 2022. Reuters reported recently, citing retailers, consumer goods firms, and investors. The report indicated that tough price negotiations have been unfolding between retailers and consumer goods producers for more than a year now, with friction beginning in 2021 over COVID-related supply chain logjams. The situation worsened in 2022 as the skyrocketing prices of basic foodstuffs have exacerbated a cost-of-living crisis in the EU and the UK. Data of a research firm, Kantar, shows that Britons paid a record 16.7% more for food in the 4 weeks up to January 22 this year, compared to the same period last year. Meanwhile, the U.S. Food Index, which includes meals eaten at home and in cafes and restaurants, jumped 10.4% for the year ending in December. Food giant Nestlé CEO Mark Schindler told media outlets last week that the company would have to hike the prices of its food products further this year in 2023 to offset higher production costs that it has yet to fully pass on to consumers. Another leading manufacturer of consumer goods, Unilever, is also expected to increase prices for some products in 2023. Portfolio manager of Waverton Investment Management, Tinke Frike, said the last time we heard from Unilever, it was made clear that they prefer to sell fewer products at higher prices to keep prices below peers and gain market share. The world's biggest retailer, Walmart, warned in December that some packaged goods suppliers are still pointing us towards more inflation next year, on top of the mid-double digits this year. According to Bernstein analyst Bruno Montien, consumer goods manufacturers will continue to raise prices until they recover their profitability. He explained to Reuters, the only thing that can stop this is consumers starting to trade down to private label products at a more rapid pace. And if commodities keep declining, then there may be no need for more price increases.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another special edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this special edition during the holy month of Ramadan, we will be having a look at different parts of the supplication Abu Hamza Sumali. We will be bringing you different commentaries on some parts of this dua. We'll be back after you listen to these parts.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Ya Mawlai, bi dhikrika 'asha qalbi. وبمناجاتك بردت ألم الخوف عني فيا مولاي ويا مؤملي ويا منتهى سؤلي فرق بيني وبين الذنب المانع لي من لزوم طاعتك فإنما أسألك لقديم الرجاء فيك وعظيم الطمع منك الذي أوجبته على نفسك من الرأفة والرحمة.
يا مولاي بذكرك عاش قلبي. O my master, in your remembrance my heart takes delight. وبمناجاتك بردت ألم الخوف عني. And with your prayers that I hold communion with you, I can benumb the pains of fear tormenting me. Dear listeners, we were discussing this part of the supplication of Abu Hamza Thumali. We mentioned the reason why Imam alayhi salam says, بِذِكْرِكَ عَاشَ قَلْبِي. We talked about the importance of remembrance throughout the different verses of the Holy Quran and the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. We also mentioned the reality and spirit of all forms of worship, and it was remembrance. And we also talked about the place of remembrance, which is the heart, and its different functions. Now, we said that as the words of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam show, one of the important effects of remembrance is the life of the heart. بِذِكْرِكَ عَاشَ قَلْبِي. This is the exact and explicit words of the Imam. Now, we said, we can understand from the Holy Quran and traditions of the Ahlul Bayt that man can have a life which is higher than those of plants and animals. But the point is that human life is more than the life of the animals and plants. In this regard, the Holy Quran states, أَوَمَنْ كَانَ مَيْتًا فَأَحْيَيْنَاهُ وَجَعَلْنَا لَهُ نُورًا يَمْشِي بِهِ فِي النَّاسِ كَمَنْ مَثَلُهُ فِي الظُّلُمَاتِ لَيْسَ بِخَارِجٍ مِنْهَا. Is he who was lifeless, then we gave him life and provided him with a light by which he walks among the people, like the one who dwells in a manifold darkness which he cannot leave? This is an important question. It can be inferred from this very verse that man can have a kind of life whose prerequisite is luminosity. So if man possesses this kind of nuraniya, this kind of spirituality and luminosity, he is alive. Otherwise, we are not allowed to call him even human being, let alone calling him alive, even if he possesses plant and animal life.
The month of Ramadan is that in which was revealed the Quran, a guidance for the people and clear proofs of guidance and criterion. So whoever cites the new moon of the month, let him fast it, and whoever is ill or on a journey, then an equal number of other days. Allah intends for you ease and does not intend for you hardship, and wants for you to complete the period and to glorify Allah for that to which He has guided you, and perhaps you will be grateful.
Describing some kinds of human beings, which are apparently human beings, but they do not have the life of true humans, it is stated, فَالصُّورَةُ صُورَةُ إِنسَانٍ وَالْقَلْبُ قَلْبُ حَيْوَانٍ. His shape is that of a man, but his heart is that of a beast. لَا يَعْرِفُ بَابَ الْهُدَى فَيَتَّبِعَهُ. He does not know the door of guidance to follow. وَلَا بَابَ الْعَمَى فَيَصُدَّ عَنْهُ. He does not know the door of misguidance to avoid. فَذَلِكَ مَيِّتُ الْأَحْيَى. Those are living dead bodies. If you want to know who مَيِّتُ الْأَحْيَى are, if you want to know who the living dead bodies are, these are the ones. In this line of Dua Abu Hamza Thumali, when Imam says, بِذِكْرِكَ عَاشَ قَلْبِي, in your remembrance my heart takes delight, Imam Sajjad points to this superior life, the life whose essential element is the remembrance of the Almighty Allah. Just as man will die within a short span if oxygen is not available, the heart of the believer will also die if it ceases to receive that element of life. which is the remembrance of the Almighty Allah, if it ceases to remember Allah and becomes immersed in materiality, the heart of a believer will also die. And the point is, one of the levels of life is the life of faith. And perhaps it can be said that it is the true life of man. According to the transmitted traditions, the spirit of faith, or ruh al-iman, is what we call the source of life in the believer. Now, given this spirit, so long as he has not committed a sin, he possesses a different life. But as he commits a sin, this spirit separates from him. It gets further and further away by the man committing sin. So, as the true mu'min who has committed a sin repents and returns to God, this spirit returns to him. And apart from the spirit of faith, there are other types of spirits exclusive for the prophets and awliyaullah, such as the Holy Spirit, Ruh al-Qudus, possessed by the Holy Prophet of Islam and the purified Imams. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you through all my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The criminalization of dissent is not a new tactic in the US. Anti-protest laws in the United States of America are not about safety, rather, they are aimed at silencing the dissent. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Truth Out, at least 42 people who have protested the building of an 85-acre, $90 million police training facility in Atlanta, Georgia, have been charged with domestic terrorism. While demonstrators always fear being criminalized for exercising their constitutional right to stage protests, being charged with domestic terrorism has a particularly chilling effect. The move to charge protesters with domestic terrorism comes months after one protester, Manuel Paez Tehran, who went by the name Torgita, was killed by the U.S. police. Across the United States, we are seeing a rise in laws that seek to squelch and criminalize the protest. Since 2017, North Dakota has considered a series of anti-protest laws, including one that allows the state attorney general to bring police from out of town to respond to protest. In South Dakota, one law allows the state to prohibit protest of 20 people or more in certain circumstances. In 2021, Oklahoma legislators passed a bill protecting motorists who hit the protesters. Legislators in Florida, North Carolina, North Dakota, and Tennessee have also considered legislation protecting motorists who hit the protesters. While many of these measures failed, the fact that some legislators think it's acceptable for drivers to hit people with their cars merely for exercising their First Amendment rights to peaceably assemble is ludicrous. Those aren't the only states that have considered or passed laws criminalizing protest. Since January 2017, 45 states have considered 267 bills that restrict the right to protest, according to International Center for Non-For-Profit Laws. Currently, at least 39 laws restrict the right to protest, including laws that limit where people can protest, laws that provide immunity for motorists who harm protesters, laws that enact penalties for protest near oil and gas pipelines, and other critical infrastructure, laws seeking to have organizers who plan demonstrations held financially responsible for the cost of protest, laws that provide overly broad definitions of a riot, etc. That is not by mistake. We are seeing a coordinated effort to silence dissent in every state, every city, and every jurisdiction. We must be clear that anti-protest laws are not about safety. They are about silencing the dissent. They are specifically designed to silence people who are poor and people who are black or from other marginalized communities. If they do not resist such measures and do all they can to stop them, they will see escalating campaigns to silence black people, people of color, religious minorities, and other marginalized groups in the U.S. Once that happens, their communities will have no way to challenge laws that regulate many to second-class status. There is much to unpack on this topic, so let's start here. Why do people protest in the first place? In the United States of America, we frequently see protests in response to white supremacist and police-perpetrated violence, as well as in response to efforts to strip away rights from women, people of color, and religious minorities. The nation witnessed coast-to-coast protests after Donald Trump was elected president. Once he instituted the Muslim travel ban, blocking migration to the U.S. for people from Muslim-majority countries, there was another slew of protests. Certainly, a series of demonstrations have occurred in response to fatal police shootings or other instances of police-perpetrated violence. The latter has happened so frequently that black people find themselves in a constant state of seeing, processing, and challenging police shootings. When Trayvon Martin was killed in Sanford, Florida in 2012, we saw a host of young people with the Dream Defenders take over the Florida State Capitol. When Michael Brown was killed in 2014 in Ferguson, Missouri, we saw a series of uprisings throughout the country. When Freddie Gray was killed in Baltimore, Maryland, in 2015, the community resisted through protest. When Sandra Bland died in police custody in Waller County, Texas jail that same year, community members protested. When Alton Sterling was killed in Louisiana, in Baton Rouge, in 2016, there was widespread protest. In New York City's Bronx, police responded with violent force during protests in summer of 2020 over the killing of George Floyd. The city will now pay $21,500 to each protester, and there were around 300 people participating in the demonstration. In the same way that legislators are becoming savvier in terms of bills that curtail protest, organizers for justice must be creative, determined, and unrelenting. If we do this, we will continue to not only win, but defend our victories, the advocates of demonstrators in the United States said. Americans are experiencing threats to basic rights like they have not seen in decades. One of the remarkable byproducts of social media is that it can ensure that millions, not only a handful of people, see a video recording within seconds. Video can also help build empathy among non-black people to join the struggle for justice. For instance, when the video is circulated of former Minneapolis Police Department officer Derek Chauvin suffocating the life out of George Floyd, most people who watched were outraged and heartbroken. The resulting protests were the largest and likely the most diverse in the United States history. It was difficult for many to look away and people demanded change. Anti-protest bills in the United States are a direct result of effective racial justice organizers and multiracial demonstrations. They cannot lose sight of that fact. They must push local, state, and federal governments to not only protect the right to peacefully assemble, but address the reasons why people are demonstrating to begin with. As Tamika Greer of Memphis Artists for Change has said, "It is a sad state of affairs that the government will enact laws to prevent protests, but will not pass laws to prevent the killing of black people by police." The criminalization of dissent is not a new tactic in the United States, but that doesn't mean that it is impossible to resist. Americans must continue organizing, continue identifying ways for their communities to engage in resistance movements, and continue educating the masses on why movements to curtail their rights to peaceably assemble hurt them all, not just black people.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be looking at a very important and pertinent question, and that question is about the benefits of fasting. As you know, we are in the month of Ramadan. We are approaching the end of the month of Ramadan, this is a very important month. This is a month in which we have been asked to fast. It is obligation in this month. There's a lot of other important and significant features about this month. This is the month in which the Holy Quran was revealed. This is a month in which the nights of ordainment fall. There's a lot of important aspects to this month. As we said, this is one of the months. This is the month in which we have to fast. So, one of the questions that people often ask regarding fasting is, what is the benefits of fasting? Why do we have to fast? Although, you know, today this is kind of taken for granted. A lot of people, even non-Muslims, you know, they fast. They do intermittent fasting. You know, and the people have recognized the benefits of at least the health benefits of fasting. And you know, fasting is, as we should mention here, that fasting is a part, as an integral part of all religions. You know, there's not a religion out there that doesn't have fasting as one of its regulations in some form or the other. You know, Christians fast. You know, Hindus even fast. You know, these are all religions that have fasting as one of its important parts. But the question we want to ask today is, what are the benefits of fasting? In this, we have a beautiful hadith which has been transmitted from the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, which kind of alludes to some of the benefits of, or at least one of the benefits of fasting, and that is that fasting is one of the ways in which we can increase our memory, our power and our capability of memorization. In this, the hadith, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam says, there are three things that eliminate forgetfulness and incite remembrance: recitation of the Holy Quran, qira'atul Quran, brushing the teeth, wassiwak, and fasting, wassiyam. Prophet mentions three things. Reciting the recitation of the Holy Quran, this is something that we can do in this blessed month. It has a lot of sawab. Brushing the teeth, we might not be able to brush our teeth while we're fasting, but we can do so before and afterwards. And finally, fasting, this is the month of Ramadan, we can fast. We can do all of these three things in this month and increase our memorization. You know, a lot of people think, there's a lot of people out there who are students going to university or, and they have to take examinations. A lot of people skip their fast under the impression that, if they fast, they won't be able to perform well in their exams, or they might be tired or hungry and might not be able to concentrate on their studies and prepare for their exams. A lot of people, they don't fast in this month for this reason. But if we, looking at this beautiful hadith, we can say that, contrary to what these people surmise, fasting can aid in our retention of information and, actually help us in our, academic progress and our success in this world, and not only in this world, but in the hereafter. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the benefits of fasting and its aid in strength and the capability of memorization. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.